Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of December, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Dun-da-da.
Mozilla is introducing a new security feature. It claims will make Firefox the most secure browser available to consumers. Dubbed RL Box and available through the current Firefox 95 update, it's a new sandboxing tool the company developed in collaboration with the University of California, San Diego, and the University of Texas. All modern browsers use sandboxing to protect users against malicious code. The problem is that many of the most advanced exploits chain together two vulnerabilities to bypass those protections. With RL Box, Firefox will compile a process into WebAssembly and then convert it to native code. According to Mozilla, this approach presents two significant advantages. It prevents code from jumping between different parts of a program and limits access to specific areas of your system's memory. With the release, Mozilla will use RL Box to isolate five components of Firefox, including the browser's graphite font rendering system and the OGG multimedia module. If the system works as expected, if the company says even a zero-day vulnerability in any of those five components should pose no threat to Firefox. Mozilla is quick to note it won't be able to use RL Box to protect every component of Firefox. For instance, it's not suitable for modules that depend on sharing memory with the rest of the program to function. However, the company is hopeful that other developers will use the technology to make their software safer. In the meantime, RL Box is now rolling out to all desktop and mobile versions of Firefox. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Firefox enhances its protection. And your choices are, great, it's my go-to browser. I'll have to look into it. Could be interesting. You'll pry Safari from my cold, dead hands. Netscape still works great for me. And other. So far, we've got 23 votes posted. Number one choice is, great, it's my go-to browser. Apparently, no Mac people ever vote in the poll because it's zero for Safari.
I'm still working on something else.
Okay. We'd love you to go to soundbites.org and vote in the poll. That's at the upper left. You'll see vote, take the poll here. And then if you said other, or if you have more to say, and I know you people, you can scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 11 December 21, Firefox enhances its protection. And, of course, if you have more to say, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I switch between Chrome and Firefox once in a while, yeah. Opera, and I've started using Brave fairly consistently.
Brave got into trouble a few months ago about they were giving information away, they like they said they don't.
Right. But then they stopped, apparently.
Yeah. But that's apparently a lot of trust to lose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
really. Now, was this part of the sandboxing cookies that they did a couple months ago? So one of the problems with cookies is there are so few advertisers these days, mostly Google. Yeah. The point of a cookie is only the company that sets the cookie is the only company that can read the cookie.
Yeah.
But since Google and Facebook set so many cookies, they can read every cookie on every website you go to.
Well, there's a thing, I forget what it's, universal cookies or...
Right. And so Firefox was implementing a cookie sandbox. So every website has its own cookie sandbox.
Right.
And even if it's the same company, the same advertising company, they cannot read the cookies, their own cookies, from a different website.
Right.
And that will allow you to leave your cookies on because most websites don't work without cookies. But it will not allow the cross-site tracking that most people find so annoying and giving up so much of your information without realizing cross-site tracking.
Right.
And the browsers are trying to stop cross-site tracking themselves. And then the advertisers find new ways to track you across sites.
That's why I use Firefox almost exclusively for Facebook.
Yep.
That way the Facebook universal cookies don't touch any of my other browsers. So we'll see. But at any rate, if you have more to say about it, please do give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Dan did from Rochester, New York. Hi, Dan, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Oh, peachy?
There you go.
Peachy, okay. A couple of questions, Macintosh questions. First of all, if I want to transfer everything from a MacBook Air that's running 10.12, 10.12 something, to a brand new MacBook Pro, is there an easy way to do that?
There's a migration assistant built into the OS, been in there for a decade or more. When you turn on the new computer for the first time, it will ask you if you want to copy your data, and you can say yes. If the new computer has already been set up, there is a migration assistant program in the utilities folder that you can run. The fastest way is to use target disk mode and connect the old computer to the new computer with a Thunderbolt cable. If you don't happen to have those, which a lot of ordinary people don't, then it will work over your network, either Wi-Fi or Ethernet. It's a little slower doing a network transfer. The other way you can do it is take your backup drive you have on your old machine, because of course you have a backup drive, and then you plug that backup drive into the new machine and restore all your data. So then that again is a direct device import, so it would be faster than going over the network.
Okay.
It also, Migration Assistant also works with Windows. So if you're going from Windows to Mac, you can download a Migration Assistant for Windows. And be able to copy your Windows files and all your mail, too. It'll convert your Outlook mail into Apple mail, which is tricky.
Yeah.
Because Outlook is a proprietary PST, and Apple uses a generic Mbox.
Right. Now, it doesn't do applications.
Right. No applications. They wouldn't run on the Mac anyway.
Right.
But it does do all of
Well, no, I mean from Mac to Mac.
Mac to Mac. Yes, it does.
Oh.
It doesn't – well, it does check if they're compatible or not. If they're known incompatible, you'll get a message. If they aren't known to be incompatible, they'll still copy and then not work.
Right. Well, the new Pro will be an M1 chip, right?
So far, yeah. Well, the 27-inch iMac is still the only one without was still an Intel. But yeah, so it'll be a new Apple Silicon M processor, and it still has the 64-bit requirements that came out like 3 years ago. So if your program is 32-bit only, it's not going to work anyway. But if it's an Intel-based program, it will most likely run in the Rosetta 2 translator that comes on the M1 machines. And many programs have been updated. I found a couple of them that are annoying. Google Chrome will not update from the Intel version to the Apple Silicon version. You have to go to the Chrome website and download the Apple Silicon version manually.
Interesting.
And so that's a little annoying on some of them that won't upgrade. So there's two ways a company can make a program. They can do a universal program that's Intel and Apple Silicon, or they can make a specific Apple Silicon only version and an Intel only version, which each individual program is a little bit smaller because the universal program has double the code in it, so right. It can be a little bigger. But it's easier because it doesn't matter what chip your computer has.
Right.
Okay. To put it in target mode, it's, what is it, splat T or something?
Just the T. Hold on the T key as you boot, and it puts it into target mode. And then you can use FireWire if it's an older computer or Thunderbolt if it's a newer computer.
On the older computer, if I wanted to reinstall or remove Safari and then reinstall it, how would I go about doing that?
The short answer is you don't. Safari is considered part of the operating system. And the only way to remove it is to erase the operating system. Why do you want to remove Safari?
Is the bigger question. It's not working.
Okay. That is most likely not the Safari application. That is one of the preferences or support files. So you can go into your application support folder and remove all the Safari stuff there. And then when Safari launches, it will make all new caches and temp files and support files that it needs. It's almost never the application itself.
Okay. Where do I find this folder?
In the library folder of your user account. Well, and actually one test is make a new user. And if the same problem happens in the new user, it's a system library issue. And if the problem doesn't happen in the new user, it's a user library issue. So each user has their own library of their own preferences and their own settings and their own cookies and their own everything. And then there's a system library that has settings for the whole operating system itself. So if the program goes away or if the problem goes away in a new user, it's definitely a user library issue.
And if I remove the stuff from the system library, does it rebuild there too?
Yep.
Cool. And that's located exactly where?
On the hard drive. There's a folder called library.
Okay, and in library, I'll see system library and the...
No, that is the system library. Okay, there's the root library and the system library. The system folder is your operating system, and you should never touch that.
Okay.
There is a library folder at the root, which is the library that's used for all of the applications on all users. And so the root library is the one you go into to delete things that affect all users.
And is that hidden, or is that...
That one's visible? Now, ironically, that one is visible. The user library is hidden, because you really shouldn't go mucking in the libraries. But if you know what you're doing, you can.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah, so the system and the library folder should not be visible, technically, to be safest. But they are visible. Although the operating system will warn you if you try to delete something it really needs. Which is what happens if you try to just drag Safari to the trash. It will say, I can't, because it's part of the operating system.
And to make the invisible user library visible, I go into the library.
Hold down the option key while you choose the Go menu, and that will let you go to the invisible library.
Option Go. I love all these little hidden things.
Right. Dan, we've got a bunch of people on the line. I got to move on.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye
bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a shortcut that will turn all hidden files on. Like you can use.
Yeah. You don't want to do that because then people say, "Well, I didn't know what that was, so I deleted it."
What is this wire and what's it go to?
Well, whatever it is, it's not going to anything right now.
Okay, this is extra.
There you go.
Because I thought everything was working.
All right. Yeah. Every operating system has hidden files. And they're hidden because the average human should not be mucking about with them. So do not. If you know how to find hidden files, generally don't, because it's a temptation you shouldn't succumb to. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matthew from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Matthew. What's up?
How many rumbles have you had today, sir?
Yeah, not enough, clearly.
Yeah. I haven't even made them yet.
Okay.
They're still marinating?
All right, I got to talk about some Rochester issues. I know you guys don't like to discuss politics on the radio.
We are not going to discuss politics, Matthew. We are simply not.
No, but you guys all have green light, right? you guys all have green lights.
Yes.
Let me ask you. Okay. So I go downtown, and there's the biggest building in Rochester, New York, and it says, this is the fastest internet speed in Rochester, New York. So my question to Tom Golisano is, why can't Rochester have free Wi-Fi with green light, which would be a good thing? I used to live in Buffalo. The whole city was covered with Wi-Fi. Why doesn't green light step up and put Wi-Fi downtown and everything like that?
Rochester That's already has free Wi-Fi from Frontier.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I don't think that's a green light issue. I think that's a city council issue.
Right, and why should Tom Golisano pay for your free internet?
Right, it's a city council issue, and you should be directing that question to the city council, not to Tom Golisano or green light. It is a political issue, not
service.
It's a political issue, Matthew, not a technical or CFO issue. You need to be speaking to the city council, not to anybody at Greenlight.
And as it is, he already stepped up and turned around. And I mean, your up speed and your down speed were two different speeds. Once we hit into COVID-19, bam, he stepped up to the table and gave you both fast upload and download speeds at no extra charge. And he hasn't tuned that back yet.
Right. Mark Murphy, who's been on the show a number of times, has said that a lot of the problems they have are not technical. Mm-hmm. So you really need to talk to a different group of people. Okay, thanks, Matthew. We're going to move on. Greenlight is wonderful, but there are a lot of hoops to jump through before an area can be wired and set up.
And
none of those hoops are technical.
And one of the issues we have heard about is that an executive from the opposing company lives on one of those corners and doesn't want their lawn dug up to run the new wire.
Right.
And
that, like I said, whatever the reason, they are not technical issues. And so, you know, that's just life the way it works. And we wish it could be different, but it is not currently.
And there are already a lot of free hotspots all over Rochester, some provided by Spectrum, some provided by Frontier, and a lot provided by businesses.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Lots of good work you're doing.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. On the poll, I have switched to Firefox completely. My Android phone, the Chrome browser kept locking up.
Interesting.
And I got tired of resetting, and I just started using Firefox and have not had a problem since.
Yep.
So I don't know where that problem lies, but it could be something I'm doing, or could be something with the phone, or could be...
Or as Steve
plugins.
Alluded to in the... What?
I would say plugins.
Right. It could be plugins, or it could be something in the cache.
Yeah.
That's sort of fair, as Steve alluded to with the first caller.
Yeah, I've had to go through all the processes of cleaning out the cache and cleaning out any junk files, and I use Avast and, you know, run through that, and that usually would bring it back, but I've not had to do that with Firefox.
Right. So
it's new. When you start a new browser, everything is great.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, it'll start getting slower.
Yeah, fresh.
You add another plugin, it starts getting slower. It builds builds up its cache.
Or some update.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, the other thing I have is my... you there?
Yeah, yep.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The other thing I have is just when I went to call you, my phone said that I don't have... I'm not connected to a network, which... I had to shut the phone off and restart, and I've contacted Metro numerous times about the problem, and they go through a reset, and it works fine for a while, and then all of a sudden I get that same message after I've been doing some browsing, and I see something I want to call, and then go, oh, let me call that number. And
so are you saying it's not connected to a cellular network or to a Wi-Fi network?
A cellular.
Yeah, that's a Metro problem.
Okay.
And there's pretty much nothing you can do on your phone to fix that.
Unless it's a phone problem. Either you try a new SIM card and see if that helps, or it may be something in the phone itself.
Right, but if they can reset something
at their end,
and it works, it's unlikely to be his problem.
True.
Yeah. It seems to be after I've done some browsing and looking at some stuff, and then I find something, you know, I went to your website, and instead of dialing your number, I just clicked on the copied the image and call from there. And it said I didn't have any service, and then set the phone off, start the phone back up, and it
all worked. Yeah.
So you think that's a Metro issue?
I think it is a Metro issue. I mean, if there's something they can reset at their end that fixes it, it's a Metro issue.
Yeah.
In general.
Okay. I'll go back to them again and.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have, yes?
Well, I was going to say, since a storm is rolling in, we should warn folks that with this storm coming in, and it's probably going to take power out, especially they're saying on the west side. Listen, folks, with your computer, it's a good idea to shut it down. Those power bleeps that all of a sudden, you know, it turns off, turns on, can damage your computer. So for a little while, just, you know, if you have to, use your phone. But if you got a desktop computer or a laptop, shut it on down.
Unplug it. That way it doesn't get any of those spikes. Yeah.
Especially if you got a laptop. Laptops that don't let it run out the battery.
And a lot of people have surge protectors, which are good, but don't put too much faith in a surge protector because surges are actually really, really uncommon.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what kind you have.
Right. Well, a surge protector, but if you have a UPS, that's better.
Well, again, it depends on what kind you have.
Yep.
Because there are two kinds. There's the kind that jumps in when there's a problem, and that you can still have the problem.
Yep.
And then there's the kind, and I forget what the two names are, and I know there's somebody out there technically screaming at
voltage,
the phone right now.
They're voltage regulation.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Each different brand name other
one,
different things.
The other one, the computer, it works like a laptop. The computer runs off the battery constantly, and then the plug into the wall, the mains, as our friends overseas call it, constantly recharges the battery. And that's the one that's the good one,
right?
Because a battery can take a heck of a charge of a spike, and also brownouts don't bother it at all.
Right. And one thing, though, folks, you also have to remember, now, if you get one of these power strips, you know, and it's a surge protector, and you wind up getting a surge, and you have to trip it, might want to go out and get a new surge protector because, yes, it still will plug. You can plug it in and it'll still work. But now it doesn't most likely have the surge protection. It did its job the one time.
Right.
Saved you. And I Triplite makes great ones. Yeah. I recommend Triplite all the time.
Some of the more expensive ones you can reset. And if you reset them, then they're fine again.
Yeah.
But they have a mechanical fuse, not a
right. A lot of times the fuse is a little strip of metal, really, really thin.
Right.
And so if there's a surge, that metal melts and opens the circuit. If you're unlucky, the surge is so high that it melts closed from the two ends, and now there is no surge protection anymore.
Right. So a UPS is better than a surge protect by a huge amount. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from all the way from Tampa, Florida. How are things in Tampa, Mark?
A little warmer than up there right now.
We're all going to come and visit you in about a month and a half.
Well, no, it's 63 here. That's for December.
Yeah.
Oh, good. You know, I was just up there for Thanksgiving. I just got back last Saturday, so.
Nice.
Thank you guys for everything you do. I really appreciate it. I've been listening to you guys for a long time.
Thank you.
Hey, so real quick, I got three questions, but one's fast. So what is Greenlight? Is that a local internet? Like less expensive?
Yes, it's high-speed fiber internet.
Cool. Secondly, I've heard you guys, you know, you talk about backups a lot, and it's good. Well, I've heard you reference a free software, I think, that you use a lot. Can you say that name again of a software or a good one that you use a lot?
There are several that we tend to recommend. If you want an off-site backup, I recommend pCloud. For on-site backup, there's three or four of them for each operating system. And if you go to our website at soundbites.org, the very top post is called You Don't Have Enough Backups. And it links you to a page I wrote called Backing Up, Ask Nick. And it lists pCloud and a bunch of backup solutions for Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and iOS.
Great. Yeah, that website's great. I've been using that Security Tangle for years. I've saved more people, my friends, to get just their computers are jacked up with full of junk. That Security Tangle is great.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks.
Yeah. Last question. Is there software out there that's free or not too expensive that, you know, I do have backups, but it's really like I've made copies of files and across drives and laptops and old laptops. It's kind of gotten away from me. Is there software out there that can scan a folder or a drive and find and eliminate duplicates that's kind of user-friendly?
Not specifically. There's a lot of them that claim to do that. And generally what they do is they scan your folder and then give you a list. Here are the files we think might be duplicated, and then you have to look at them to make sure they're duplicated.
Yeah.
You can do that yourself. You don't need a program to do that for you.
Yeah, I can do that myself. So, okay. Guys, thanks for everything you do. Happy holidays.
Thank you. And if you have not seen the Security Tango, it's at securitytango.com. And you should take a look. And while I'm here, let me just thank everybody who has been kind enough to donate to keep the Security Tango alive and updated and everything else. I very, very much appreciate it. Thank you all. For that, keeping all of our websites running ain't cheap, frankly. And I appreciate all the help you folks have given me over the years. So thank you. That's just a humble moment for me. I appreciate it very, very much. Thank you. Dave is frantically writing. Hopefully I'll be able to read his handwriting as we go back to the phones. It's Travis from Leroy, New York. Hiya, Travis.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, windy. That storm just got here to Leroy, so it should be hitting your guys' way in about 20 minutes.
Great!
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I just got a quick couple questions. One's a smartphone issue. It just started happening about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, what is it?
It's, okay, I'd open the browser, right, and say I go to, like, Facebook or Instagram. The loading bar will get to, in Chrome browser, it'd get about a quarter of the way, and then the app just shuts down completely and exits me out. Would that be, like, an update issue, or is it, like, a browser issue, or what do you...
Well, let me ask you another question. Can you get to other websites?
No, they won't work on anything. It gets the loading... It'll get to like a quarter, and then the whole app just shuts out.
Right. Okay, so the easiest thing to do, we're looking at caches and stuff today.
Yeah, it's trying to load something from cache and probably crashing because it can't read it right.
Right. You can clear the cache and the cookies on your Android phone for Chrome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Samsung A10e.
Sorry?
It's a Samsung A10e.
Yeah. Okay, so what you do is you open up Chrome.
Okay.
Hit the three dots in the upper corner there, the more, or the whatever they call it these days.
Right, the menu there?
Yeah. Go to history and hit clear browsing data.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
And then you can say delete everything for all time, and then you can check both cookies and site data and cached images and files, then tap clear data, and everything is gone. Now, that means you're going to have to log into any websites that you normally use again.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I would also then go in and look at your extension list to see if any unknown extensions got snuck in. And then disable any extensions you don't use anymore. It's really common to install an extension that sounds cool and then stop using it in a few months. But it's still in there running, still doing whatever it was told to do originally.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think about the extensions. Okay.
There you go. That's how that works.
Okay, cool. And another quick question. Would any of you guys recommend using a Raspberry Pi Beowulf cluster to mine any kind of cryptocurrency?
No. And here's why.
Unless you have free power.
Unless you have free power. there's a guy who did a whole extensive thing, and the easiest stuff to mine is Monero. You can mine that on a Raspberry Pi fairly easily. It's designed specifically to not work with GPUs. So it works great with a Raspberry Pi. Using a Raspberry Pi at an average cost for electricity, mining Monero loses you about a penny a day.
Oh, wow. That much power, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, it's not a lot of power, but you also don't make a lot of Monero every day.
Right, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah, that's all I had to say. But, I've been a long-time listener, and I love the show.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks, Travis.
All right, have a good day.
You too.
So for a while, if you have, when power cost was low, or you live on a raging river and can put a hydroelectric dam in...
Your very own hydroelectric dam.
Or there's that story about a power plant in upstate New York that is making cryptocurrency.
They're generating. Or you're in a dorm room and you're not paying for your electricity.
Yeah, if they make more power than the town needs, we'll find something else to it. I knew a guy that used to have a plant in Palmyra that had a whole bunch of cryptocurrency miners there until electricity got too expensive. But it really cut down on his heating bill.
Yeah, I bet.
Have all those computers in there running so hot.
Right. So, it's not just a matter of setting up any computer and suddenly making a bundle of cash. First, you're unlikely to make a bundle of cash. And even if you do, you have to factor in how much money you're spending on electricity. Because it's not going to be cheap. A regular computer is 140 watts, 150 watts. Figure out what that costs you an hour and how long it took you to make a buck crypto mining, you've lost money.
Yeah.
Even on a Raspberry Pi, you lose a penny a day.
Oh, easily.
So it's not the big deal you think it is.
No.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from East Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Doug. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Peachy.
I went shopping for a new flat screen a couple days ago, and there are so many choices out there.
Yeah.
And they're getting so cheap, too.
Yes, and I do over-the-air TV right now because I don't want to keep paying, the large provider here.
Right.
And I'm just curious as to, the Roku and the OLED and all of that stuff, if you could do, buying a new TV Course 100 here.
Yeah. Let's start with screen size. That depends on where you're going to put it.
Big.
Big is good if you are far enough away that you're not straining your eyes seeing it.
We were looking at one last night that was 118 inches.
Excellent.
It was only $35,000.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Put it in the backyard and wait the neighbors over. Yeah.
Drive-in theater.
Exactly. Yeah. So first, that's a personal, that's a choice.
55 tends to be the common size now for a living room area.
Right. As for OLED, they are brighter and tend to be better than regular LEDs.
But they wear out faster.
Okay.
So, if you're planning on keeping this for 15 years, maybe not an OLED.
In fact, not an LCD at all for 15 years. You know, plan to replace it about every 5 years or so.
Right.
And that can factor into your cost. You know, if you pay $2,000 for a Sony and it dies in 5 years, that's a huge cost per year.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you paid $500
and it dies in 5 years.
5 years,
yeah. Even if it dies, but you want the next bigger one. I bought a 55-inch 5 years ago for $500.
Right.
And now I'm looking at a 70-inch for $500.
Right. Now, as for what services you get, there are 100,000 streaming services. Every one of them is the best service that's ever been, ever, if you talk to them. It depends on what you watch and how you watch it and when you watch it. You can buy a digital antenna for, depending on where you live, anywhere between $10 and $100. And that depends on how close you are to the, like I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill, so a $10 digital thing worked great for me. But, you know, if you're farther out, maybe a $50 one or a $70 one or a $100 one.
And that gets you free over-the-air, high-definition broadcast channels.
And you get a dozen channels. But there's no VCR or any of that, you know, DVR.
You have to add that separately.
Right.
DVR for over-the-air is a little tricky to find.
Right. But if you go with one of the streaming services, then it's just a matter of, look, make a list. What do you watch?
What networks do you watch and what shows do you watch?
Yeah. Right. And then you can decide which every service will show you a list of the things they provide. One of the big ones getting a lot of press nowadays is Google TV because they just YouTube TV.
Yeah.
The Google TV.
Yeah.
Because they just made a deal with Hulu for all their free stuff. So the trade-off there is you get free stuff, but you watch ads.
Yeah. And almost every TV you'll find in two versions. One has the Roku streaming service built in, which has hundreds and hundreds of channels. And the other one has Android services built in, and that has hundreds and hundreds of channels. And now we're starting to see a growth in Apple TV service being built into the television, so you don't need a separate box. So even with a dumb TV, you can add a streaming service. You know, we like to say that the Roku box, the Google box, the Apple box, they make a dumb TV smart, and they can make a smart TV smarter. But now a lot of that stuff is being built into the TV, so you don't need a standalone box. And then, of course, most of the TVs will have a connection for your cable box if you still want to use cable.
Right. One of the things that I have done is I've got a Chromecast and a Roku thing. So I had them already set up. So even though I recently bought a TV that's smart, I still use those two because I don't have to set anything else up again.
Yeah, that's what I do with my Apple TV.
Right. And I bought a switcher box for HDMI.
Trying to get my wife to learn how to use that HDMI switcher.
But at any rate, it now comes down to a spreadsheet. You know, make a list of what you watch, when you watch it, where. Then make a list of all the services that offer all those channels and pick the one that you like the best.
There is a website called suppose.tv.
Yep.
I'll post again here in a minute. That you put in the networks you watch, and it tells you what streaming services those networks are on and how much it's going to cost.
Okay.
One of the interesting differences between a lot of the streaming services are old shows versus new shows. I just saw Philo. $25 a month is one of the least expensive streaming services, but it's mostly old shows. I personally just went with YouTube TV because they're running a great deal where you get 2 weeks free and $50 off your first month.
Right.
That's $65 a month for 85 channels, which is, you know, less than half of what I'm paying Spectrum.
So right. And if you get all the channels you want,
yeah,
you win.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you sometimes add other ones. So, like, we have to get to Disney Channel for Disney and Star Wars and Marvel and Pixar. And
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then you start down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. But you'd need that anyway, no matter what, you know, streaming television shows.
Right, exactly. Those are extras. But for that base thing, do what I said. Create a spreadsheet. Figure out which one suits your needs best.
Oh, okay. Do these work off Wi-Fi, or how do they actually work?
Yes.
They work off Wi-Fi, but it's better if you have Ether. The wired is more efficient. Wi-Fi is much more convenient.
Right. Depends on how close you are to your router and where you can run cables and blah, 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 blah. But they'll work over Wi-Fi. Now you have to worry about how fast your Wi-Fi connection is. If you've got one of the slower Wi-Fi connections, it's going to be a little frustrating. And how close you are to your router, if you do wireless, you'll find you get a lot of reloading, and it's frustrating.
And that can also depend on how many simultaneous streams you want. So if it's mom, dad, and three kids, each want to watch a different show on their own device, you need even faster Wi-Fi and internet.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I've got about 200 here is my speed, and everything is right in the living room. So,
yeah, depending on how many people are in your house, that should be just fine.
Okay. And how do they bill you? How does that work?
Just like any other service, you pay monthly, and you can set up a take it out of my account thing, so that you don't even see it. It's painless until you get the bill.
Yeah, most of the streaming services want to be set up for auto billing off a credit card. So you get an electronic bill and then pay it. I don't know any of them that do paper bills anymore.
No, I think they're all electronic and auto pay. So those will be out of sight, out of mind is what they're hoping for.
Okay, yeah, just easy.
And that is one of the advantages of streaming services these days, is you can sign up for one and binge watch all the shows you want, and then cancel that one and sign up for the next one, because it's relatively easy to switch services. Where with traditional cable TV, that's the only option you have is cable or satellite, and that's annoying to switch between.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any of them have better sound than any others? I know they all seem to project out of the rear of the TV.
Most TVs don't have very good speakers, and that's sort of the accepted. In fact, for a long time, TVs didn't have any speakers.
Right.
The intent is that you plug into external soundbar of some sort.
Yeah, I've got a soundbar on mine. Yeah. I love it.
I just got a really, really cool soundbar from LG. Black Friday sale for like $100. And it's 5.1. And the rear speakers are wireless. So you don't have to run wires from your TV to the speakers behind you, which is really, really cool.
Right.
Very nice, yeah.
Oh, the sound is unbelievable, especially with the booster right next to the TV. And, I mean, you get some of that stuff, and it all, it just comes right at you. It's in your face.
You should be aware, Doug, that that's more rabbit hole to drop down, and you can spend more on the sound bar than you did on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, any brands that you're partial to? I mean, I'm looking for something maybe 43-inch. I don't need anything really large.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to check the sales. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, the warranty.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll never need it, but the warranty will tell you more about the how confident they are in their product than anything else.
We're also seeing some interesting house brand and low-end type brands, Insignia, TCL, Hisense, Anna. O-M-N, something like that. Amna.
And then there's O-N-N.
O-N-N, yeah. They are significantly cheaper than the name brand Sony Samsungs. Most of the time, they are just as good. They may not last for 10 years, but you're probably going to want a better TV with more features and a bigger screen before then anyway. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents got a TV the same year they got me.
Nice.
And when I was about 17 or 18, it finally died.
Yeah.
And we threw it in the back of the garbage truck. And the garbage guy had such a grin on his face when he pulled that squish lever. And we waited for the CRT to implode. And it just echoed through the whole truck. It was wonderful.
Great.
So, yeah, the ideas of your TV as furniture are kind of long gone now. Now it sits on the furniture.
Right.
Yeah. Believe it or not, the flat screen that just died, I bought in 2009.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it was a 32-inch Westinghouse. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Westinghouse made good stuff. Absolutely. All right, listen, I think it's time for us to move on.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right, that music tells us we are done for the first hour, but don't feel disappointed or sad, because we have a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, a whole nother hour of sound bites, another hour of Dave Enright, another hour which will seem longer, of Steve Ray, and another hour of me, Nick Francesco, and another hour of all of your phone calls. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break and come on back for another hour of sound bites and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Yeah, I'm seeing some conflicting information on the web about SIM cards. I recently got an iPhone 13 mini to replace my very old iPhone 5S. And what I'm seeing is some people suggest it's just okay to take the SIM card out of the old phone and put it right into the 13, but others are saying that the older cards are not compatible with 5G.
Which is true. So those are both true.
Yep.
Okay.
So if you're going from a 4G phone to a 4G phone, then you can just move your SIM card, no problem. If you're going from a 4G phone to a 5G phone, you'll need a new 5G SIM card.
That's true with any, whether with it's any, Android
right.
or
yep.
whatever.
Now, but I'm using AT&T. I don't know whether they're operating on 5G at this point or not.
They all claim they are.
There's a couple of different 5Gs, so
yes.
Yeah.
And the bigger thing is, do they charge you extra for 5G service?
Right.
Some of the carriers do, some of them don't.
Okay. So I should query my AT&T carrier to find out whether
right.
that's correct
yeah.
or not.
And how much 5G you actually get.
Yeah, they may have 5G service, but you only get 100 megs a month.
Okay. But if you had a 4G SIM card in there, it would still work on the 4G part of
not
the phone.
Always. We've
right.
we've
not
seen
all?
Yeah, okay. The 5G phone is expecting a 5G SIM card.
Okay.
Yeah, you really do need to talk to your carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll tell you, I went from a 4G phone to a 5G phone. I'm on Verizon, but I just took it in and they were quite happy to just give me a new SIM card, move me over.
Yep.
Do all of that without any question, without any hesitation.
This may be also an opportunity to shop for a different carrier to see who has a better service plan, better coverage, better pricing.
Right.
While you need to switch SIM cards anyway, and you can yeah. always port your phone number to a new carrier if you do switch carriers.
Right. And of course, just threatening to do that might be enough to get. a new SIM
That's
card.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Good luck. Yeah, there's a lot of issues with phones that are just not intuitive.
Yeah.
And not easy to really get your head around quickly.
And some carriers are worse than others. We we have a hard time. Someone brings a phone in for service. They can sometimes qualify for a loaner phone while theirs is out for service. We have the most problems with Sprint because they won't let you transfer your SIM card to a new phone. We feel like they want to take that opportunity to upsell you and make you buy something new.
Right.
And not just a loaner phone. So you have to go to a Sprint store, have them transfer your account to the new phone, the loaner phone. And then when you get your actual phone back from repair, you have to go back to the Sprint store and get your account transferred back to your original phone. We are hoping that's going to stop now that T-Mobile bought Sprint.
Right, right.
T-Mobile never did had you do that. It was just
you just
Sprint.
Swapped the
yeah, you
card,
swapped the card and it didn't matter.
Right.
But now we're running into the problem that if someone comes in with a 5G phone, we don't have 5G loaners.
Right.
And a 5G SIM won't work in a 4G phone either.
Right.
So that becomes a trickier problem.
Right. But so far, well, I guess I can really only speak to one carrier, but they were absolutely fine with us walking in with two phones we didn't buy from them and
yep.
doing a bunch of stuff.
You're getting,
my
you're
wife
getting
got my old phone,
them.
I got a new phone.
But you still have them as a provider, so that's right. Where they're making it long term. Is
right. Where we won was they tried to upsell us, and it's an odd word to use considering what happened, upsell us to 5G unlimited service. Turns out that they were having a sale. And apparently, and I have this in writing, it was permanent. I have unlimited 5G, which means really unlimited, not 20 gig and then it drops down.
Yeah.
It's really unlimited. And we have unlimited data, and it's costing me less per month than my old contract. What? Okay.
Somebody had a decimal point wrong somewhere.
I don't care.
That's the,
I have locked it in.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was very happy with that.
Yeah, because 5G costs more than 4G, obviously.
And yeah.
I'm sure, you know, that's a big thing. You know, whoa, you're getting a free phone. Yeah, but they're also selling you 5G service, which costs more, and your plan's going
to
go up.
Someone has to pay for all those new towers they have to put in.
Right.
And one of the problems that 5G, especially the millimeter wave, which is the fastest of the 5Gs that we want, they need an antenna every 400 or 500 feet. So it's basically it's Wi-Fi ish.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and so right
whereas
now,
the 5G most of us already have is the long wave, which is not as fast.
Right, and a tower
still
every couple of
than,
miles.
Right,
is fine.
It's still faster than 4G.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Yeah, it's Mark.
Mark,
I'm sorry.
How you doing, guys?
My Peachy, mistake. How are you?
Good.
That was my mistake.
That's okay. We all make mistakes. Anyways, going back to the gentleman with the TV.
Yeah.
I find that TVs, smart TVs, and Blu-ray players streaming are pretty limited in what they let you do, and they don't support them for a very long time. I think the best smart TVs out there are probably the Rokus and the Fire TVs that have them built in, and some of the ones that have Android that are moving over to Google TV. Those tend to be supported for a much longer time than the proprietary streaming on
and,
the TVs.
And if it's hard to tell on the specs, but if your TV allows you to add more apps, that's best. So you might buy a smart TV, and the only apps it has is Netflix and Hulu. So you can't add Amazon, you can't add YouTube.
That's one reason to go with the external device.
Yeah.
Because I can buy a new Roku stick for $35 or I can buy a new Google TV for $50.
Yeah,
new Google Chromecast for $50. So, you know, that way you get an upgrade without having to throw away a television.
Right. Like I said, if you're going to get a smart platform in the TV, I think the Roku or the Fire TV.
Yep, I've got the same, Mark, I've got the same thing.
Yeah.
What I liked about it is I'm down to one remote.
Yeah.
Because now I can sit there and switch over to my external antenna to get to 8, 10, and 13. But like Steve was saying, I can add, you know, any other programs like Peacock or any of these other services.
Exactly.
And built right into it, and the others are already there, whether it's Sling or Prime TV, which I have, or Hulu. They're all there in it.
Right.
Right. Another nice thing, though, is if you do have an external device like my Google TV with Chromecast, if the CEC is on for the HDMI, I can use my remote to control the device.
Yep.
And your TV will turn on and off when you turn your box on and off.
Right, which is another nice feature, which is actually getting better as they move up. With HDMI, they're getting more and more features.
Right.
One other thing that Roku just announced that they're doing with their new devices, they're adding voice. So you can sit there and click it and say, search for this movie. And it will go out and search for that movie.
Google Chromecast does the same
Apple does the same thing. Although we do tend to see Apple favors their own service.
Shocking.
But we'll show,
you
that show from other services, too.
Right. Google, the Chromecast actually has Google Assistant in it, so you can ask it all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's like having a Alaska on your TV.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Yep.
One of my favorite features is, what did he say? It jumps back 30 seconds and turns on closed captioning.
Yes. I don't watch anything without closed captioning anymore.
Yeah.
Mainly I watch it because I watch a lot of British stuff.
Yep. And my wife was just complaining the other day that she was watching a show and the soundtrack was too high and she couldn't hear the voice track.
Oh, that's common nowadays.
And so
you
try to turn up the volume and the background sounds.
Right.
That's one of the problems with surround sound TV. The background sounds get more. So now I got to teach her how to use the soundbar remote to turn down the rear speakers.
Right. All right. Did I just move the
one thing I
got
to remind folks, I don't mean to be rude, but when I ask you folks for your name, it might have to speak up a little bit. You know, I have to talk low because I'm here in the studio and right over my ears are two gentlemen right here in the studio talking. Well, I'm
and the mics will pick you up in the background.
Yeah,
he turns his mic off, but our mics will still get him.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, you know, hear your voice. So it's not that I'm...
I wonder if I do this.
That might help.
But, you know, I need folks to just speak up a little bit.
Yep.
So I can hear you because it's hard.
Yep, I bet. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Hi guys. A few months ago, I called you about the problem I was having with my HP X360 Chromebook. I would boot it up and I'd be working with it for about 2 hours and it would suddenly, the screen would freeze. And without explanation, no matter what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Okay.
So we talked about it a little bit, and you didn't recognize the problem. And so I procrastinated a little bit, but I kept going around with HP. We power washed it. We reinstalled the operating system, all the stuff. They finally said, send it back for repair. So I sent it back. I get it back 2 weeks later. I boot it up. 2 hours later, same thing. I'm working on something. Screen freezes on my external monitor. I can move the cursor for a few seconds. And there's, you know, still some activity. If I'm watching something on the browser and it's got some video going or something, that's still going for a little bit. But I cannot click between tabs and I can't do anything. It's just the screen is frozen. And then it just, everything goes blank, Chris.
Okay.
Power's still on. All right. So I call him back. And we go through it again. Power wash it. And do this, that. And so they said, okay, send it back. I sent it back. You know, the first time they repaired it, they said they replaced the motherboard, which seemed like drastic to me, but okay.
That's the only thing inside, probably.
Yeah.
And it's integrated graphics, right? So, graphic chip. So, anyway, it comes back. This time, they changed something called the raw board or something. I don't know what that was.
same thing happens. I'm working on it. And
okay, I need you to speed up a little bit here.
Okay. So all right, they finally sent me a new computer, brand new one, to replace the other one because they couldn't figure out what was going on, and I got the same problem.
So it's not the computer, it's your monitor.
But are you using the internal monitor on the Chromebook?
I'm using both. It happens with both. If I'm using the external monitor, it happens. If I'm using the internal monitor, the screen just doesn't freeze. It just goes blank and then freezes.
Okay, what extensions or apps are you running?
Chrome browser. Nice.
Yeah, maybe look through the extensions to find ones that snuck in, like a previous caller.
Right. So you have two things that work in a Chromebook. One is the apps that you load, and the other is the extensions that can be added to Chrome.
Correct.
So you need to check both, A, to see if there's something you didn't intend to install. Which, remember, every time you power wash and bring your apps back, you bring all the apps and all the extensions back, so any problem they were causing comes back every time.
Yeah, sometimes as a test, you power wash it, set it up as new, and see what happens. Don't bring any of your stuff back yet.
Right, because you can always power wash it again and bring that stuff back.
Yeah, bring your stuff back, yeah.
You do that, you may find that the problem goes away. Then it's a matter of finding what app you're running or what extension you're running that is causing the problem. The other thing you can do is just turn off all your extensions.
And I would suggest do this without the other monitor hooked up.
Right.
Don't keep, both variables in there. You're trying to sort out too many variables. Take the monitor, the external monitor out, only deal with the Chromebook and get that isolated first to see what might be causing what. Or otherwise you're going to pull your hair out.
That's exactly what I did when I got the new Chromebook back.
Okay.
I just booted it up. I didn't do anything. I didn't load any apps. I didn't load any extensions. I only got two extensions on the thing. LastPass and an ad blocker. That's it.
And
I tried it, with and without the external monitor. Why does it boot up normally? I'm working and it takes 2 hours for it to crash.
That's often a bad solder joint, and it heats up. The solder gets soft and separates the connection it's waiting for.
Yeah,
on two separate computers.
That's what they claim is two separate computers,
Or a manufacturing defect in that entire line. I'm seeing a lot of complaints about the HP X360 freezing.
One little trick: what you might want to do, just to see if you get yours back, is send it back. Because obviously it's defective. But on the underside of it, what I would suggest you do is there's a little sticker, usually the manufacturer sticker and all that.
Yeah.
Take a small marker, marking pen, and just put a little couple dots in a corner with non-erasable, ink. You just put two little dots.
So, yep.
Send it back. And tell them, hey, I want a new computer. If you get that one back with two dots on it, I've had that happen. I've literally had that happen. So that's where I learned that trick decades ago. I did check
the serial numbers between the old one and this one that came back, and they are different.
The serial number is on a sticker.
No, it's actually etched on the back.
Oh, all right, then.
Face.
Okay.
Yeah,
they might have just put a new, whatever, but yes.
Yeah. But send it back. It's still, like Steve said, they could have a bad run of bad solder joints. I mean, we ran into it back in the day when we were building computers. You could build a, put it in a hard drive, and I'd order, say, a half dozen hard drives. And I remember one computer I was building, I literally went through all six hard drives because they all failed. I put it in, I get it all set up, and all of a sudden it crashed. I put in a new hard drive. Boom, I did that six times. And I had to send all six drives back.
When I was at RIT, we ordered 73 laptops from a company.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from them saying, we had a bad run of motherboards. It's going to delay your whole order because every motherboard failed. And certainly, you know, not their fault. They don't manufacture the motherboards, but, you know,
stuff
what are you
going to
do? And it's possible. It's certainly possible.
Yeah, so, that you know, we're talking about because they just, you know, changed out the motherboard, figuring they just put another one in. It's probably from the same line.
I guarantee you they didn't take out the motherboard, replace the motherboard.
Well, unless it's a manufacturing defect, and then the part had the same problem.
Right, and that's what Mark just, what Dennis just said. If it's a manufacturing defect and it's from the same run, when they replace the motherboard, they get the same problem.
Yeah, but the thing of it is taking out a motherboard, it's easier just to disconnect the laptop screen.
No, I understand all that, but that, you know, the point is, if they did and it came from the same bad run, you're going to get the same bad problem.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Yeah. It's same lot. It's just like also going back, and Steve would remember this, when we had a bunch of bad capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
They were popping like crazy, and they were breaking open. You could open up a computer and see it spewing out the acid from it.
Yeah.
And failed industrial espionage.
I have another bit of information. I bought this thing like January-ish, right? And I'm looking at whatever info I could pull up on this thing in the file app, and it says January 21, 2021. So it sounds like it's from the same production run.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I really needed a sanity check because I've been going crazy saying, what the hell could I possibly be doing wrong?
No, I don't think you're doing anything wrong, Dennis.
Nope.
So, okay.
Sorry.
Thank you. I'm still sane.
No, that's not a guarantee, but at least this is not what your problem is.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. You have a great holiday.
Good luck. You too. Yeah, again, we come up to the complexity. Is it a hardware problem? Is it a software problem? Is it a network problem? Is it an app problem? Is it an operating system problem?
And it's almost never you.
Almost never, and that's true.
Yeah,
it can be you. It's much rarer that it would be you. All right.
I had a poor woman this week. She got a new computer. And on the Macs, they have a wireless keyboard and wireless mouse with rechargeable batteries, and there's a power switch. I showed her where the power switch was when we set the computer up, when I turned it on. And then I showed her where the power switch was
when I
turned it off and boxed it back up for her. An hour later, she's at home, can't get her computer to work. Why doesn't the keyboard work? Why doesn't the keyboard work? So Jackie's trying to talk to her. Why doesn't the keyboard work? Do you have to turn it on? What do you mean turn it on? Nobody told me I had to turn it on. I'm sorry, I did twice.
Yeah. Yeah. But people aren't paying attention. They're just, I have a new computer.
Yeah, they're more or less
thinking.
That's all
that's in their head, yeah.
They're already home, sitting at their desk, using the new computer. Yeah. They're not paying attention to at all.
Sometimes the funnier part is, a month later, they'll call, but my mouse quit working. Well, have you charged it lately? What do you mean, charge it?
Yeah. And we talked last Sunday about where that mouse port is and how stupid that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Plug it into charge. You can't use it. So then go get your cup of coffee.
That's right. And by the way, before we get back to the phones, let me remind everyone that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will have the Soundbites Lounge. If you go to soundbites.org/lounge at 9 p.m., you'll see a link to the thing, and we'll answer people's computer questions. Right now, we're going to talk to Brian from Gates, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Hi, guys. Not much. Since the wind is starting to pick up again, and I think we'll go back to that power outage thing you were talking about earlier. Well, I've got a Chromebox, which sits on my desktop, and most of the time I leave it on. Unfortunately, I left it on a Monday night when we had the blow, the Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we had a power outage. I lost power for about an hour and a half. Oh, shit. Okay. Oops, sorry.
Yeah.
Waited it out. Power came back on. Everything's fine. Everything seemed to be working just fine. Reset all my clocks.
Yeah.
But somewhere around 3 in the morning, we got a surge, a pop.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to wake up in the morning and reset all the clocks. And the computer the box wouldn't boot correctly. Came up black, it wasn't there, and I tried to turn it off to reset it and come back up. The light wouldn't go out. I could not stop from the on-off switch. That seems odd.
Yeah.
So I got a really good power backup. I mean, it's one of the battery charger ones you were talking about before. So it's a really good one. It works really well. I like it a lot. Must be something else. What's the easiest way? It's plugged in. Let's unplug it.
There you go.
So I picked up the box and just pulled out the power supply for 20, 25 seconds, plugged it back in. Bingo, everything's back.
There you go.
So it's not always a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and clearly what happened somewhere along the line was there was the power surge or the power blackout did something to the power supply in the cord.
Yep.
That box in the middle of the cord, the anaconda with a mouse in its stomach. And that's and pulling that out allowed that to reset as well. So never forget that you can do that too.
It worked. Have a wonderful life, gentlemen.
You too. Have fun.
Be good.
Bye-bye. What happened there? We're going to take
your mic off.
Well, thank you.
You
weren't done yet.
Did I? Oh, good for me. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of, or not, with Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you, 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, we're on the final leg of our journey today with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Listening to that weather forecast about the high winds, I hope your antennas survive.
Well, mine are all wires, so that... That's the great thing about it is I've got them literally up in trees, and they're on the branches, so that they're swayed. A couple of my friends have what they call Yagis. They're these huge antennas sitting on towers. Yeah, I've seen some that bend right on over. But, you know, so a lot of them have to literally turn them into the wind.
Sure.
So, you know, they don't bend over, but yeah, no, mine. I still worry because there's my neighbor has this one tree that he allowed me to put a couple wires up and in, and this tree definitely has some issues.
Yeah,
so I'm wondering.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not just a pole tower,
yeah,
a pipe tower, yeah. Antenna. I mean, it's also, you know, how sturdy is the tree that wire is in?
Yeah, well, I've got one pole that literally is like a fiberglass. So that's great because, believe it or not, even though I have it up 40 feet in the air, you know, it's bending with the wind.
Supple is good when it's...
Yeah, you don't want them taut. You don't want them... They got to have some room because of the breezes and everything else, because that's one thing... At least up here, you know, we don't get the tornadoes and the hurricanes and all that. I've seen some folks, they've had like 60-foot towers, and they're bent over like a pretzel.
Yeah.
Because that wind gets whipping along, and it doesn't take much, and boop, takes them right on down. But
Dave was right earlier when he said, be aware that there will be power outages in our area. And if you're running a desktop without... UPS, or as a friend of mine was doing, running a desktop with the UPS, but not the monitor. The monitor was not on the UPS. How do you know to shut it down? How do you shut it down? You want to be aware that you are going to risk your entire setup if you leave it plugged in during this time.
And it's better if you got a laptop, then make sure it's fully charged and just run off the battery from that. Same with my ham operators, you know, shut the machine off. If you want to, you know, hook it up to a battery, fine, you're good there. And you can usually run a few hours. You're not going to put out, you know, over 1,500 watts anyways.
Right.
Just run off what they call QRP, which is low power.
Right.
And work that way if you still want to work, because there are some contests out there right now. But with the conditions out there, look at Kentucky.
Yeah.
How the storm went ripping through there and the lives that have been lost. My heart goes out to those folks because
absolutely
they didn't have any warning and it just, bam, hit.
Right. But here you may also lose your internet connectivity. And if you do, you know, buy a banjo or read a book. Remember books?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. There is, or even before books, just talk to other individual family members.
Whoa, what are we, barbarians?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
All right, let me read a news story.
I know, it's harsh. I mean, I go to a restaurant so much, you know, and see these folks just buried in
their
phone.
That the worst?
Yeah, it is.
Why do you bother getting with other people if everybody's just looking at their phones all the time?
Literally, last night we went to this one place to have our fish fry, and there was a table of 8 people. Even down to one little kid.
Yeah.
All, and this is no lie, all 8 people were buried into their phone. You know, I mean, wait a minute. You're getting together for, you know, a Friday night fish fry in there. Why not? Because they're, you know, you can tell they don't all live in the same house, but they're all buried into their phones instead of talking to each other.
Yep.
Hello?
Sometimes I just don't want to cook. But I still want to read my phone.
You're right. We have a rule in our house. No phones while we're eating. My daughter comes over for breakfast on Sunday. Except this Sunday. Tomorrow we'll be at the public market for the last of the public market Sundays. It's going to be lots of fun. Stop on down, buy some coffee, have a chat. But
when can I put my coffee order in?
Yes, you today would be good. Because we're not going to be there Christmas Day. We're not going to be there New Year's Day. At any rate, we have that deal. Except, you know, a couple of weeks ago, my daughter said, I will be looking at my phone because I'm the maid of honor for my friend's wedding. And we're planning this weekend. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fair.
My dad had a good one.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm 1 of 6. And if the phone would ring during dinner time,
yeah,
Dad was able to reach over and grab it. And they go, yeah, she is. And then hang up.
Answered your question.
And my two sisters would go banana. Who was that? Well, they wanted to know if Deb was there. And I said, yes. And he hung up.
That's how it works.
You don't call during dinner.
That's right.
We used to get them so sick.
I have a friend who's got multiple children, and when they go out to eat, the rule is no phones. But I have another friend who has a rule: when we all go out to dinner together, first person to look at their phones pays for the meal.
Ooh, I like that.
That's
one.
That's my favorite one.
I'd leave my phone in the car
to
make sure.
Right. That's exactly right. Now, one of those people is a doctor, so she is exempt. And that's fair.
Yeah.
That's completely fair. Because she never, you know, she never knows when she's going to get a call. So that's different.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, if you answer your phone, you paid for the meal.
Okay. No, that's fair.
And we had one person who answered the phone right just before we ordered. Everybody ordered the most expensive thing on the meal, on the menu.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
So when does it start? When you sit at the table?
We sit at the table.
Oh, yeah.
From that moment.
Till you leave, or until the check shows up.
Yep.
That's fair game.
Right. No, until the check is paid, until everybody stands up. Well, I guess after the check is paid, because you can't stop them at that point.
Yeah.
All right. This goes along with a couple of our phone calls. A major issue for Roku has been averted after it confirmed that it had reached a multi-year agreement with Google to let the YouTube app remain in the Roku store. The two sides had been deadlocked in disagreement over the continued availability of the YouTube app for new Roku users. Those that already had downloaded it would be able to continue to use it, but new people couldn't download it. Losing direct access to YouTube is not the best look for a company trying to lead the streaming revolution. However, the two brands have agreed to a multi-year extension with Google for YouTube and YouTube TV. The reason for the original disagreement, which would have seen YouTube disappear as an app on December 9th, is still rather murky. In Roku's press release, the brand states that it wasn't about money, but about Google's insistence on the features that Roku must support and its placement in the Roku's channel store. This isn't the first time Google has had a disagreement with a major brand over the use of its apps. Windows Phone, remember that? Was launched to much fanfare by Microsoft in the early 2010s, and users initially loved that the YouTube app blocked ads and allowed videos to be downloaded. Google didn't like this stripping of a revenue stream, especially as Windows Phone was building momentum, and forced the app down. It was re-enabled with the ads back and downloading capability removed, but was taken down 2 days later after the two parties disagreed on the use of the new HTML5 format, and it never returned. While far from the only app missing from the Windows Phone, YouTube left a huge utility hole as users needed to head to the mobile site to engage with Google's popular video content, while the Android and iOS versions of the platform offered slick and impressive functionality. Even with the agreement in place, we've yet to see what this multi-year extension will actually bring. Has Roku conceded to let the app appear towards the top of search listings? Will the search and data capabilities be upgraded? Regardless, keeping the YouTube and YouTube apps in the store will help the popular platform remain attractive to new customers. This is especially important as the holiday season approaches and families settle down to movies in front of the TV. Having a strong proposition that will also allow them to browse popular YouTube content is key to the continued success of Roku. Lest you think this is a tempest in a teapot, remember that YouTube gets 400 hours of new content uploaded every minute. And then realize that on mobile alone, YouTube reaches more adults 18 plus during prime time than any cable network does. The most important statistic, 68% of users watch YouTube to help them make a purchase decision. So do you choose who? Hey, hi. Do you check YouTube before buying anything? Give us a call, 585-9. Don't talk to me, but give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, but that's, I'm sure all of us here, if we need to know how something is done, where do you go? YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know, if you need to change something and you're not sure on how to do it, somebody's done a YouTube on it. You can go in there and they'll do it step by step and say, oh, I learned instead of doing it this way, here's a trick. And boom. An example for me is changing the belt on my snowblower. Before right. the company has you drop all this, because this is 44-inch snowblower. You know, you got to drop this and do it. And a guy, I saw another video there. Oh, okay, I'll try this one. The guy goes, well, here's an easier way. All you got to do is drop this one nut, slide it off the old one, put on the new one. I go, that saves a lot of time. Yeah. I'll go with that.
That's
one.
That's something I'd rather do in 15 minutes than 2.5 hours.
Then instead of muscling off this huge, you know, 150-pound snowblower attachment.
Right.
Here's the 27 simple steps you need to remove the whatchamacallit from the thingamajig.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, the number of people watching, like I said, 400 hours uploaded every minute. Surely
you
can find
come.
Something.
And I am serious.
What, Sirius Black?
Yeah.
Yeah. Surely you can find something to watch out of 400 hours every minute.
I still always hate the GD commercials right in the middle of it.
Sponsor block. I keep telling you, sponsor block.
It that's
skips
one.
Every single sponsored content.
Wound up weaning myself off of Facebook and everything else so much.
No, this is in YouTube. It is an it is a Google Chrome extension or Firefox extension.
Edge, Firefox, Chrome, Android, iOS,
everything.
Sponsor block. All right.
It's called Sponsor Block. And what it does is it's crowdsourced. So if you're the first one to watch something, you're going to see the ad. But by the time I look at them later in the evening, 1,000 people have said, oh, there's an ad here, it starts here and it ends here, and Sponsor Block skips it. But if you want to see it, you can go back and watch it. I use Sponsor Block constantly. It's quite an amazing little product.
One of the YouTube channels.
It's an extension for all of the browsers.
Yeah, one of the YouTube channels I watch is XJet. He's a New Zealand RC flyer. And he's kind of curmudgeon-y. He reminds me a lot of you.
Thank you.
Bruce is his name. And he's really, really hits against YouTube on how bad their algorithms are and how little money you get paid. I've got 10,000 views and I made 3 cents. And so he's cut down on the number of ads that he's allowing YouTube to put in his videos and went to Patreon. So
a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I give him a couple of bucks every month and... So that works. He says he makes a lot more money that way than he did on Patreon and on YouTube directly. YouTube makes a lot of money, but he doesn't.
You should tell him a little bit about Mastermind Lounge. We're finding that a number of YouTubers in that same situation find that being able to say to their Patreons, we're having a video chat, and it's a perk for Patreon people, but other people would pay.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah,
and you can make money at that as well. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Good afternoon. I think I recall reading something about the Google Roku fight, that Google wanted access to personal data and other information from Roku. That was what I thought was the primary.
That's certainly a possibility, yes.
Google wants to spy, and, well...
that's the big fight at Apple, too, is that you buy something in the Apple store, Apple gets your information. The developer of the thing you bought doesn't. And some developers want to have a relationship with their customers. And
right.
Some don't want to have a support contract they need to pay for.
And others just want to spy on you so they can advertise to you.
Yep.
Anyway, another point. The guy about an hour and change ago was talking about the TVs. He could consider a Plex server with a Plex Pass subscription, stick a tuner card in a computer, install Plex on it, and that's his DVR, TV tuner, and everything.
Yep. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Plex is a server that you run on your system. You can run it on a Raspberry Pi, or you can run it on an old desktop or laptop, and it will. You can do all kinds of things with it. And the difference between Plex and Kodi is really designed to be an in-box theater. You hook a TV to it and you can do all kinds of things with it. Plex is really designed to share stuff over a network. So, for example, with Kodi, I can watch a TV show on the Kodi box. With Plex, I can download things to my tablet and take them on the road. I can set it up so that I can watch my Plex stuff from out of the house. I can Chromecast it to another device. So, both of them are useful. Plex is more designed for a networked audio, video thing.
TV.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's an excellent idea. If you want to set up a Plex server, you need a lot of disk space, but not a lot of power. So a lot of people are hooking, a 2-terabyte hard drive to their Chromebook, to their Raspberry Pi, and doing it that way.
Now, what I'm doing is a Linux box in the basement.
Yep.
That has a Hoppage, I think is how you pronounce it, WinQuiet tuner in it. And install Plex on that. The tuner is operated by the Plex server and the clients. It's just like watching TV.
Yeah, and you can put multiple tuners in a PC that has multiple slots to record different stuff at the same time.
Well, the WinTV Quad 4, it's a single card, but it's got four tuners in it.
Yeah, that's the other way to do it, yep. So and then put two of those, you can watch 8 things at a time.
Yeah, I don't have any more PCI slots.
Yeah.
But that's what I'd suggest to the guy. It's the best way to cut the cord. I cut the cord about 2 years ago using this thing.
Yep. It's tedious to set up, but once it's set up, you're pretty well done.
It's not that bad with Ubuntu. Yeah. Ubuntu's a lot easier than Linux used to be. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And on a Raspberry Pi, you can actually download a Plex server as your operating system and install that on a card. So yeah. It's actually easier to do than you might think.
There's also TV tuners with USB, so you can use them on a laptop and take them with you.
Right.
If you have don't have a PC with slots.
Right. Well, but also you can
throw that out there.
Yeah. So also you can set it up. Thanks. You can set it up so that if you allow outside access to that thing, mm-hmm. you can connect to it with passwords and security and yada yada on the road and listen to stuff that way. You're obviously limited to your bandwidth, obviously, but you can do it. So there's a lot of pretty neat features for all of those things. None of those servers are difficult to set up. They're just tedious. I got to say, they're tedious to set up correctly the first time. Well, obviously, once you've set one up, you think, oh, I get it now. Yeah. But that first one is tedious. And again, that's where YouTube comes in, and you just watch a half a dozen how to set up a Plex server or a Kodi server.
Learn from those folks' mistakes or simplification of it. And you're up and running. And again, by getting a Raspberry Pi, like we've said before, folks, it can do so many things. You're not investing a lot of money. So even if you set it up and then all of a sudden say, no, this is really what I want to do with it, you can erase it or put a different SIM card in it and have it do something totally different and not much money.
No, not much money at all. So, yeah, and for those, and to forestall other phone calls, both Kodi and Plex are in and of themselves 100% legal. You can load apps, if you want to call them that, into both Kodi and Plex that are illegal, but that doesn't change the app. That's you. Mm-hmm. It's like you can use your browser to download content that's the pirated content. That's not the browser's fault. That's on you.
Right.
So it's the same with Kodi and Plex. They are legal products that legally do a lot of amazing things, but you can also do a lot of illegal things with them.
Well, it's like just like the old day with BearShare. Remember that?
Yeah. LimeWire.
Yeah, all those. Yeah. You know, it's like you're stealing songs.
Right.
What it came down to, but yet software was legit for, you know, copying your, say, your library of songs over to a device. So you could have it, say, on an iPad or what were those? iPods.
Yeah. That was always one of the complaints against the iPod is that there was no way to copy music from an iPod to an iPod. Because they didn't want you to steal your friend's songs.
Right.
But what if you bought a new iPod?
Right.
Well, then you hook it back up to the computer and copy them again. But I don't have that computer anymore. Okay.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Then you hook the old one up to a...
And you can't import from an iPod to a computer because you might be stealing someone else's songs.
Right.
Fortunately, the DRM has been removed from pretty much every service now. So they're not copy protected, but they're still licensed. So if you try to play a song you purchased from a service on a brand new computer, it's going to ask you to log into that service to prove that you bought it.
Right, right. And that's fair. But yeah, you can, there's a lot of, you know, if you, the gray areas, if you own a DVD and then you rip that DVD so that you can play it from Plex instead of from the DVD.
It's a perfectly legal backup copy.
It's probably a perfectly legal backup copy.
Except,
we are not lawyers and...
for your own personal use.
The act of ripping it means that you broke the DVD protection, which is a violation of DMCA.
Right.
So we have the copyright law that allows you to do a legal backup fighting against the DMCA that prevents you from breaking encryption.
Right. So, yeah, we are not lawyers. We don't give legal advice.
I don't even play one on television anymore.
Yeah. We're not doing it. But I'll honestly admit that I have done that. I have, I just did it recently with the Nero Wolfe Mysteries. I have the entire set from A&E Mysteries loaded onto my Plex server, and I just watch them when I want to watch them. And
stop them as you need to.
Exactly. And so I don't think that's illegal.
Selling it, and you know it's for your own personal use.
It's just my personal
use. That's where I think, you know, like you say, you can get into gray matter and all that, but you know, if you're not doing it to, you know, go out in the street corner and hand out, you know, sell copies of that because you ripped it to a DVD, it's for your own personal use. It doesn't go outside of the house. Nobody's going to have a problem with that.
Right. And you can play music with it. There's a thing I use all the time on my Raspberry Pi called Clementine, and it's a music player. Mm-hmm. And it connects to about, I don't know, 50, 60 different streaming services. Some you have to pay for. Most of them are free. But the ones I pay for, I log into, and I can play, you know, Pandora or whatever I want to do. And I can just log in and listen to music all day long without a problem. Some services I pay for, so I don't hear ads. Others I don't pay for, so I hear ads. It depends on what I want to do. And I can take all my music, again, gray area, I guess. I can rip all my CDs. I have about a terabyte of music on the thing. And I can just say, oh, I want to listen to this album or that album or, you know, whatever. And I can listen to that, and it plays all over the house. And I've recently started looking into, can I connect that to my phone and play, you know, bring up a thing and say I want to listen to this album. I believe it is possible. I just haven't looked yet. I will do that soon. It's on my list of things to do, and one of the things on my list of things to do is to get rid of some of the stuff from my list of things to do that I'll never do.
Got to look at that list every now and then.
Yeah, that's the problem. There's always something I find more interesting at the moment.
Yep.
Than starting with my list. Yeah, I'm very easily distracted. Squirrel. Okay, that's frightening. That's a frightening thing. I don't care what anybody says. All right, that's it. We killed Steve, but we are done. That's it. We've wasted 2 hours of all of our lives with this nonsense, but you're in luck. We'll be doing this again next week. Will we do this? Yeah, next week we'll do this again. But we're off Christmas Day, but we're here next week. I want to thank everybody who called in. We had a lot of great calls today. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get, including Andy's email, but I want to thank everybody. We'll be back next week. With a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we continue with your generous support to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. It's 59 minutes after the hour. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?